All right, let's turn this morning to Exodus chapter 20. The subject this morning, I'm going to be pretty much as discreet as I can. So we're going to look at the seventh commandment. The seventh commandment found in verse 14. Thou shalt not commit adultery. The truth that underlies this commandment is the sanctity of marriage. The sanctity of marriage. We know throughout the Bible, God sanctifies certain things. People, towns, vessels, tabernacle. Means he sets them apart. Marriage is one of those things that God sanctifies. And that's what we want to look at this morning. I don't know that I'll deal with this in it next Sunday. But I'm just going to look at an overview of what it says. Because that's a tremendous problem in our society. A tremendous problem. I want us to turn first of all to Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2. Marriage was planned by God. Marriage was planned by God. When you come to Genesis chapter 2, everything up to this point, God says, was good. As he created all things, God said it was good. But then something was not good. In verse 18, and the Lord God said, it is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helpmeet for him. And then from there he gave the process. And he brought the woman to the man. Man needed a helper, a helpmeet. Marriage would solve that. Marriage was God's remedy to meet that need. So God ordained and sanctified marriage, not man. God sanctified and ordained marriage. Marriage finds its source in the wisdom of God. Marriage is defined by God, not man. Today, we've got all kinds of definitions of what marriage is. But apart from God's definition of marriage, there is no other definition. God planned it, he sanctified it, and he defines it. The first wedding, could say, was officiated by God. As he brought the woman to the man. And then we have the leaving and the cleaving principle. that was to take place. Man was to leave and cleave. There are some who have never done that. Their marriage is in a lot of array because they've never left. When God created man, or when he created this image, he said in verse 24, a man leave his father and mother, cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. Now, a person can leave geographically and not leave. There are those can live 3,000 miles away from their parents and they hadn't left their parents. But then there are those that can live next to their parents and they've left their parents. Now, we're not talking about leaving in a bad way. We're talking about creating a new family unit where the husband is the head. He makes decisions. He and his wife together make decisions. But some way or another, marriages are too tied down to mother and father. Now again, I'm not talking about in a bad way. You respect your parents. We've already seen that. We've already seen there's honor. But there is that principle of leaving. And I hate to say this, as you women, I do. You know, I always say that, you know, mother is just one letter short of smother. Be careful, okay? Be careful. Because this is a very vital, vital principle here that can cause a lot of problems in marriage. But I'm not here to talk about that. I'm just laying the foundation for where we're going, okay? So God brought these two together, and when he did, he blessed them. And it was to be one man and one woman. Y'all got that? One man and one woman. God does not bless any other union in marriage, but one man and one woman. So God unites the man and the woman and they become one, because God planned it that way. Then, let's turn to Ephesians chapter 5. Because not only did he plan marriage, but he used marriage as a portrait of Christ and his church. That has fallen by the wayside. I'm telling you, that has... We don't even think about that anymore at weddings, hardly. But God uses marriage as a portrait of Christ and his bride, the church. In Ephesians 5, God gives the guidelines for marriage. And the guidelines he gives for marriage, if it is followed, this blueprint, then it will be a marriage that portrays Christ and his church. It will fulfill his purpose. One of his purposes. Well, there are many problems that arise in marriages because they don't read the blueprint. They don't look at the blueprint. And they don't like some of the blueprint. But they have to deal with God one day. Let them settle that with God. But God has given a blueprint here for marriage in Ephesians 5. He likens it and tells us in that passage, it is a portrait of Christ and the church. Now, I bought a chair Friday, I think it was, because now with my hip problem, every time I sat down in a chair, it wouldn't work. So I said, I got it. So I had to get one with a lumbar. Well, so we go to Office Depot. By the way, if anybody's interested in a really, really nice chair, I've got a deal for you. Come see me. Because I got one, I got to get rid of it. So if you're interested, let me know. I think it's only about 6 months old. But I'll give you a good deal on it. You won't believe it. So we go and we get this chair. Well, you know, they're not going to let you take the one on the floor. And they asked me, can I get it assembled? She said, yeah, for $20. I looked at Jenny, I said, you want to assemble it? Because I didn't know if I wanted to exert any energy, you know. Like, I'm milking this thing now. And she said, well, if you sit down, show me how. I said, okay, we'll work it out. So, you know, you get up. You ever got like a desk or a cabinet or a grill, and you're going to put this thing together. And so you get, and you take it home. You got this big old box. And you open, you tear into it, and it's got all the stuff in there. And then it's got this one box in there that weighs about 10 pounds. And it's got all kind of hardware in it. They got nuts and bolts and screws and washers and everything else. Now, it is a blessing. It is a blessing when everything works out. But when it don't, you're in trouble. But you take that thing home and you begin to assemble it. Now, I'm one that when I take it home and I tear into it, I kind of look at the pictures and hit them. Now, you know what it always tells you? Read the instructions before assembling. Read the instructions before assembling. I've never done that. I have never read instructions before assembling. I have checked to make sure everything is there. But I'm not about to sit down and read that 10-page pamphlet. I'll just try it as it comes, maybe. But then you think, this ain't going to be no problem. I can already look at it and see that I know exactly about where everything goes. Right? So we dive into it. And we start putting this thing together. Whatever. And the bigger the thing is, the more hardware you got. And you got screws with different heads on them. You got to have a different Allen wrench. You got to have all this stuff, you know. They can't make it simple. Well, you dig into it. And about the time you get halfway through it, something is not working. Something's not fitting. So normally I'm thinking it's because of them and it's warped or something. So I push and I tug and it just won't fit. And I'm thinking, what is the problem? Or I get into it and it's asking for these screws. I got these screws left and they won't go in like the chair. It happened. Because I'm there telling Jenny, these are the screws you need for this. I said, we need to go in right there. We put them in. They did just fine. They were about an inch long. But then we got to the point where we had to put the back on it. And I had those screws that were left. And I stuck in. I said, these screws ain't long enough. I put the screws that went there into the oven. So we had to take all those screws back out and replace them with the shorter screws. And it worked good. Now, I don't know, but when I start into that thing, how many times you get about halfway, but things are just not working out. And somebody comes in and they said, have you read the instructions? Well, I didn't really see any need to, but now I guess I better. Well, you know that's the way marriages are? They don't read instructions. They don't read the blueprint. We got this. We got it. And they don't got it. they don't got it. They get into the marriage a few years and they don't got it. They thought they had it. Things didn't work out as expected. You put something together and you get to the point and everything's going good, and all of a sudden something don't work as you expected it would. And the marriage don't work. Something's not working here. My expectations have not come to fruition. I saw a book the other day that I thought pretty interesting. Somebody had it, said, things I wish I knew before I got married. Things I wish I knew before I got married. Well, Christ, the Lord God, has given us a blueprint. He's the designer. He knows how things should work. He knows how things should go together. He knows what to do for it to work out. Just like the designer of a cabinet or a chair or a grill or whatever, they know. But somehow we think we know best. Until you get into the marriage and say, well, what went wrong? Well, I can tell you what went wrong. You thought you knew more than God did. You thought you just do it your way. And then you got a problem. And that problem not only affects you and the spouse, it affects your children. It affects your families. It affects others. Well, read the blueprint. Read the blueprint. God designs marriage. God has given us a blueprint. And if it's going to portray Christ and the church as it should, then God's instructions have to be followed. That's why I tell couples, I say, listen, read that. As a husband, read what you're supposed to do. Read what you're supposed to do, and then ask yourself, are you doing it? Are you like Christ? Do you treat your wife like Christ does the church? Or the wife, are you treating your husband like the church should treat Christ? Ask yourself that question. Because if it's going to work, that's the only way it's going to work and please God. And it's the only way it's going to portray Christ and the church. Now, I want us to look at this. We're going to go back to Exodus in a minute. Instructions need to be followed. Instructions need to be followed. You know, when a person gets engaged and they set, you know what happens then? Everything is on the wedding. Everything's all about the wedding. And it ought to be a time where you get to know each other a little bit better and you start asking some questions, you start trying to get to know, but that don't happen, does it? Everything's about the wedding. Jesus Christ and His church are in a covenant relationship called New Covenant. Jesus Christ and His church are in a covenant relationship, and marriage is a covenant relationship. It is not a contract. It is a covenant. But many today look at it as a contract. You see, a contract says, I will stay as long as you meet my expectations. You know what marriage is like today? I'm serious. This is the way marriage is today. It's just a continuation of dating. That's all it is. If I get tired of a person, I'll get rid of them and I'll go get somebody else, start dating them. That's all marriage is today in many cases. Praise God, it's not always the case. But that's exactly what it is. It's just a continuation of dating. But a covenant is a whole lot different than a contract. And marriage is a covenant sanctified by God. I will be faithful because God is faithful. I will be faithful because God is faithful. The wedding ceremony ought to be sacred. In fact, I would go as far as this, really. I think the wedding ought to be a worship service. But that's few and far in between. That's few and far in between. And when it comes to marriage, it's all about holiness and not happiness. You see, if you put the emphasis on holiness, you'll be happy. It's all about ministry and not manipulation. It's what marriage is. Isn't that what it is when it comes to Christ and the church? Isn't that what it is? So this covenant, this is a commitment, because it anchors marriage into something a whole lot deeper. Number one reason for divorce today. Number one, 70%, 71 point some percent, a lack of commitment. They get into it, things are not like they thought they should have been. They get tired of it and worn out. That's the way a contract is. That's why I say, see, it's just like dating. Feelings rise and fall. Seasons come and go. Trials come, trials go. All of this is going to be there, but covenant faithfulness does not depend on that. It doesn't depend on feelings. It doesn't depend on the changes of seasons or the testing or the trials. It doesn't depend upon that. It depends upon who God is, really. It depends on the character of God and the calling that He places upon the husband and the wife. So God planned marriage. God portrayed marriage. Now let's go back to Exodus 20. Sure, you don't have to, but you know what we're going to look at. But here's the problem. God planned it. God portrayed, used it to portray Christ in the church, but the world has perverted it. Big time. Big time. And I'm not talking, and listen, just as much in Christians as it is in the world. Just plain perversion. Sad to say. And one way it's perverted is by breaking this commandment. One way is by breaking this commandment. And our culture struggles greatly with the sin which this commandment speaks to. It struggles greatly. We have here, just like we did, don't murder. Thou shalt not kill. It could easily read, don't murder. Negative, period. Don't murder. Same thing with this one here. Don't adulterate. No adultery, period. It's negative. Don't do it. This speaks of a covenant loyalty. It speaks of breaking that covenant loyalty with the spouse. The Old Testament teaches, and the New Testament certainly confirms this. And we'll look at that, hopefully, today. But the Old Testament teaches and the New Testament confirms that marriage is a covenant relationship between a man and a woman, and loyalty to that relationship demands that spouses be sexually loyal to one another. It demands that. Notice again the first four commandments. In Exodus 20, I should have turned there, let me. We looked at the first four commandments. Now, what is it that God asked for in those four? A covenant loyalty. A covenant loyalty. A covenant, a commitment to Him and Him only. Worship no other gods. Worship me my way. Revere my name. And honor my holy day. That's all about covenant. That's all about commitment. Show absolute covenant commitment to your spouse. is the idea here. Absolute covenant commitment to your spouse. So there's a connection here. You see a connection. God in the first four was calling on absolute commitment, covenant loyalty to him. Here, he's saying that concerning a spouse. And so there's this connection. Think about this. When God is dealing with Israel in the Old Testament, what metaphor does he use when they're unfaithful? Adultery. They played the harlot. They adulteress. Ezekiel 36. I think it's 36. It might be 16. I think it's Ezekiel 16 maybe. Jeremiah 2. The whole book of Hosea. Adulteresses. They've committed adultery. He uses that term when Israel is unfaithful to him. A covenant requires commitment, and when a spouse is disloyal and unfaithful, they violate that covenant in a bad way, in a very bad way. When it's violated, Jesus said, when it's violated, that is the only way divorce can happen. Now, I'm a little bit harder than that, okay? I'm not sure when you go to Matthew that that's true. I don't know if there's divorce allowed at all. But if there's the only reason is disloyalty that Christ gives. And so God is saying here, when he puts this together and you look at it, your faithfulness in marriage to your spouse is a picture of your faithful covenant relationship to me. That's how important it is. And that's why God uses marriage to portray Christ in the church, as he does over in Ephesians 5. They're both a covenant relationship. Now, go back to Ephesians 5. If you turned away, go back over to Ephesians chapter 5 again. Paul, in this section here, he spells it out very clearly. He's very clear. Don't take a rocket scientist to see what Paul is saying. He says that the marriage is a picture of the union that exists between Christ and his church. And therefore, our faithfulness in a marriage union, marriage relationship, is really a mirror of the faithfulness of God. How important is that? How important is that? When we have a wedding, the two, man and the woman, they make a vow. The man makes a vow. The woman makes a vow. To who? God. They're not making a vow to the people out there. They're making a vow to one another, but they're making a vow to God as well. That is huge. The people that come are just witnesses to what God has already created and ordained. So it doesn't just stop with them vowing to one another. They make a vow to God in the wedding ceremony. Look at Psalm 51. Psalm 51. When David was caught in his sin with Bathsheba, okay? It is obvious that he had sinned. There's no doubt about that. He had sinned against Uriah, the husband of Bathsheba. He committed that. That's David's huge sin that we know about. But notice verse 4 of Psalm 51. Against thee only have I sinned and done this evil in thy sight. Was he praying that to Uriah? No. He was praying that to God. Against thee and thee only have I sinned in thy sight. He knew what he did. That sin that he had committed was against God. And he said, God, on. Yes. Yes, he had certainly dishonored Bathsheba. And yes, he had sinned against Uriah, for sure. But he says, that doesn't matter because I've sinned against you. When Joseph was approached by Pharaoh's wife, what was the reason for him not doing that? Well, number one, you're married. You're married. But also another thing, sinning against God. Sinning against God. So here was, David was seeing this as a disloyalty to God. To God. And that's what hurt him. Well, he wasn't denying that he had sinned against Bathsheba. He wasn't denying that he had sinned certainly against Uriah. But he said, first and foremost, I have sinned against God. My immoral behavior, my sexual impurity, all that hit on the loyalty, his loyalty to God. That's what it hit on. So there's a connection between our loyalty to God and our loyalty to our spouses and being loyal and faithful to them. Now let's look in closing at Matthew 5. I don't know if I'll get into this next week, but anyway, Matthew chapter 5, and I do want to hit on this. Christ in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 27. Ye have heard that it was said by them of old, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. If thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. If thy right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not thy whole body should be cast into hell. When the Lord said that, Jesus Christ, this is on the mount, he is more concerned with the purity and the holiness of the believer, not only in their outward life, but their inward life as well. Not only with the physical adultery, but he was concerned with spiritual adultery, the adultery that comes from the heart. And that's what he's dealing with now. It's not enough to abstain from physical adultery. The Lord wants the believer, the bride, Christ, to be pure in their thinking, in their thoughts, in their hearts. He said, so you don't have to do it physically. You do it when you think it. You're guilty of it. So he's saying that there is more than one way to break this commandment. There's more than one way to break this commandment. Just because the person has not had physical or physically committed adultery does not mean that he has not broken that commandment. That was his point. That was his point. Now, notice something he says. He goes right to it in verse 28. He says, I say unto you, thou shalt by no... Wait a minute. Am I going to the wrong place here? I'm going to the wrong place, I think. Where do I want to go? One page over, 27. Okay. Ye have heard, verse 27, ye have heard that it was said by them of old, thou shalt not commit adultery. But if thou, whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her, hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. He goes right to the point. Right to the jugular. Now, notice what he says. And I don't think a lot of people understand this. This is the Lord speaking this. But notice what he says in verse 31. It hath been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. That's in Deuteronomy 24:1. But I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except for the cause of fornication, remember we met a few minutes ago, causeth her to commit adultery. Now, do you understand what he's saying there? What did we say, that 72% of marriages break up? A lack of commitment? If a person leaves their spouse because of a lack of commitment, or they're not living up to their expectations, then what does he say? You have caused her to commit adultery. Well, think about that, dude. And their divorces happen all the time over everything other than fornication. But when you do that, you cause her to commit adultery, and whosoever shall marry her that is divorced, they commit adultery. So you have caused two people to commit adultery. If you divorce your wife for any other reason, and that wife gets married to another, you and your doing have caused two people to commit adultery. Again, he said that causes whoever marries her that is divorced committeth adultery. So it works both ways. If a person divorces his wife, if she divorces him or he divorces her, she has caused them to commit adultery if they remarry. That's heavy. Think about what he's saying there. But you know, we don't ever think about that. We think about this, well, they divorced because they just couldn't get along, so catch a Ross Raw. And it's almost like no harm done, they're happier. Well, a bunch of harm is done. A bunch of harm is done. And what do you think? You think the Lord's just smiling on that? When it comes to marriage, you think he's just smiling about that? That's pretty strong there when he says that. Well, the Lord was really attacking the Pharisees in this, because the Pharisees taught that when it came to divorce, or you committed adultery, that was fine. They were lenient. But they were very hard on, they were lenient on divorce, but they were very hard on adultery. Adultery is a terrible sin. It's an awful sin. If not repented of, it'll destroy a person. Proverbs speaks a lot about that. Martin Lloyd Jones said this, though. He said, even adultery is not the unforgivable sin. It is a terrible sin, but God forbid that there should be anyone who feels that he or she has sinned themselves outside the love of God. No. True repentance and realizing the enormity of their sin and cast it upon the love and mercy and grace of God can be forgiven and assured pardon. He said, it's like the words that Christ said to the woman that was taken in adultery, go and sin no more. Go and sin no more. There is a tremendous struggle today with this. And I just mentioned three. I'm not even going to get into them, but you know. Over 40 million Americans are addicted to pornography. Over 40 million. And then you got workplaces now where somebody in the workplace, man, woman, they go off on a trip together for the company. And that puts them in a very tough situation, doesn't it? They may be gone a week. Two married people, not married to each other. But for their company, they travel. They work together. It's like, we don't even think about that anymore. But it puts them right there. Kind of goes against, make no provision for the flesh, feel less there, but I lose my job. Well, which is the best to lose? But also, I'm going to say this. You remember when the disciples asked Christ about the kingdom, and he said, you have to enter the kingdom, and I'm paraphrasing this, like these little ones. And he had a child. And he said, that's the way it is. In other words, he was using this. He said, that's the way it is when you enter into the kingdom. You're totally dependent, like a child is. You're humble. You're dependent. And then just a few verses down, he says, he talks about offending one of these little ones. Now, he won't talk about that little child. He was talking about those little ones that are Christians, the ones that come into the kingdom. He said, woe to the person who causes them offense, offends them. Now, I can tell you that in the day in which we live, there are a lot of women that wear provocative clothing. And to me, that fits right in there. Because you have called someone to offend in their thinking or whatever. You have caused them to offend. Be careful. There's a church in Rocky Mount, pretty good sized church. You go to the church there, and this woman's going to be walking up and down the aisle, and she's got these napkins. And as she walks and she sees a lady where her dress comes up too far below her knee, she'll give them a napkin to lay over. And the reason being that you got men there and all that, they can very easily get their mind off the message. I'd never heard of that before, but somebody that went to it told me a couple of years ago. And it's still, I know they're still going. But that's a big deal. And I asked a girl said something here a while back, was talking to me and Jenny, and she was talking about dress. And I said, you know, the thing about dress, it can be attracting or attractive. I said, attracting can cause offense. But you want to be attractive. And I said, you know, Christ is seen, God, the Lord puts a lot of emphasis on the countenance in Scripture. And I said, you know, Christ is seen in the countenance. That's where you tell. You can tell somebody that's a Christian or love the Lord, just their countenance. I said, I think I'd put it this way. If you wear something that would draw attention away from your face to other parts of your body, I would say that'd be wrong. So anyway, I'm going to leave it at that. And it is serious, but you know what, again, that is not an unforgivable sin. But temptation is there, and more so today than it's ever been. More so today because of the culture we live in and what we pretty much don't think much of. It's all around us. Let's stand. We'll be dismissed.